It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. On the show today, what makes teams work? And how worker satisfaction can be crucial to a company's bottom line.
Can I just talk about how much I hate my frickin' job?
There has been some disheartening news about how employees are feeling these days. Take the TikTok genre of people complaining about their jobs.
I hate working! I hate it! I hate it!
Hating on work isn't new, but it has become more acute. A recent Gallup poll found that 70% of American workers don't like their jobs. And between 15 to 20% are actively disengaged, meaning they're phoning it in or even planning to leave.
Today is my last day.
I want to quit my job so bad.
But why?
Amazing effort, great effort, okay effort, piss poor effort. I'm getting paid the same.
Well, it's often because workers feel like the boss doesn't even notice whether they're working hard or hardly working.
If you just feel like a number somewhere, you're probably just going to go punch a clock and get their numbers and move out. And I'll be honest with you, I've worked for some pretty big companies before where I've been there a year, two, three, and never even met the CEO.
That last voice was Josh Ryan. Josh works at a company in Arthur, Illinois, called CHI, where people used to feel like the C-suite didn't care. Back in 2015, the garage door factory had a serious morale problem.
Working in a factory is sometimes a miserable experience, right? Like, most people come here and they have to do the same thing over and over and over again.
This wasn't helped when the company was bought by a private equity firm.
They'd gone from, you know, a guy who started in the backyard of someone's house here in Arthur to a group of owners from New York. People were a little skeptical, and that's one of the major reasons why.
If you're not familiar with how private equity works, investors buy a company that's not living up to its potential, and within a certain number of years, they try to turn the company around with the goal of either selling it or taking the company public. It's a high-risk, high-reward strategy. If it works, the company survives. People may keep their jobs, and the investors make a lot of money. If it doesn't, sometimes investors decide to cut costs, cut jobs, and shut down parts of the company so the rest can be sold off at a profit. Or they go through all of that to eventually file for bankruptcy. So being bought by private equity can be very stressful for employees and make bad workforce morale even worse. But that's not what happened at CHI. Instead,
business basically tripled. Our investors made 10 times their investment. So it was the best investment we had made since the 1980s in a company that makes garage doors.
This is Pete Stavros.
I co-head global private equity for a firm called KKR.
Pete has told the story of how he turned CHI around a lot. He saw what the problem was right away. Unhappy employees were dragging down the company.
So imagine you're working in the factory. Your daily work you really have no control over. You know, it's just that old line manufacturing mindset of kind of do what you're told, keep your mouth shut, do your part, and go home. Safety in the plant was a disaster. So, you know, if we just ran out our, hey, if we're going to own the business for 5, 6, 7, 8 years, the data would have said pretty much everyone in the plant at some point is going to get hurt. It was that bad.
But you saw something in it. What?
So the manufacturing model was like kind of brilliant. You looked inside and wow, this company could take even more market share, could grow even faster. But we've got to get the workforce engaged if we're going to improve quality, improve lead times further, customer satisfaction, reduce waste, reduce inventory. That's going to only happen with the entirety of the workforce in the company. It's not going to come from a dictate from the office of the CEO.
So to get those workers engaged in their jobs, Pete used a tactic that's considered very unusual and by some even antithetical to private equity, employee ownership. meaning each employee is given a stake in the company, which turns into a cash bonus if things go well.
It's a free incremental benefit meant to be retentive and motivational, just like for a CEO. Now, if you give someone stock, their expectations of you as a company just went up. Because if I'm an owner, I want to know what's going on. I'd like my suggestions heard. And I'd like information on how I'm doing. How does what I'm doing every day tie into the big picture? Where are we headed as a business? How can I help? What are the big things that the leadership team's looking at? I'd like to look at that stuff. So that's what the model is. It's an ethos.
And what's the promise then at the end? Or is there an exit plan? Because that's usually the deal, right, with private equity.
So up front, what we communicate is very conservative. This is equity. You're not paying for it, but there's no guaranteed payoff. But what we communicate, we say, if we hit our plan, and that means we all need to perform and do our jobs, but if we do, you know, you'll earn around a year's worth of your income. So if you make $75,000, if we do our job, you'll get another $75,000 when we sell the company or take it public.
So what ended up happening with CHI?
So it took 8 years, but everything went way beyond our expectations. And that spans from how employees felt, what happened to engagement scores and quit rates and worker safety. And what they yielded financially was way beyond our expectations and their expectations. So, you know, we had, on average, frontline employees make about $175,000. But many of those, you know, were not the long tenured folks. So the folks who had really been there earned 6.5 times their annual income. So we had factory floor workers make $500,000. Truck drivers make $800,000.
Life-changing money.
Life-impacting amounts of money. And so many stories of people getting out of debt and really turning their lives around financially.
Like Josh Ryan, whom we heard from earlier.
So we got enough money that I put money away for all four of our kids to go to college. Right? I started a college fund for all of them that has a decent amount of money in it. We upgraded our house. We, you know, put a large chunk of money down on our house. So people around here still talk about it like it's, you know, the greatest day in their life, because it might have been the greatest day in their life.
Here's Pete Stavros on the TED stage.
Today, I'm going to try to convince you that broadening employee stock ownership is the single most important thing that we can do to lift up workers and to make companies stronger, too. Only a tiny percentage of workers are granted stock ownership in their companies, and most workers have no wealth. And it is, in fact, stock ownership, or the lack of it, that is by a mile the biggest driver of wealth inequality. It could give us a form of capitalism that is actually inclusive. And I believe it could literally change the economy. I've been pursuing this idea most of my adult life. 25 years ago, as a graduate school student, I dove into the history of employee ownership, and I published a paper on the topic in 2002. Then a handful of years later, I got my first real leadership position at the company I still work for, KKR. And I was put in charge of investing in and improving industrial companies, mostly manufacturing businesses. And that was a great opportunity to start experimenting with different ways of sharing stock ownership with all employees. In our early efforts, the most important thing we got right was making sure that stock ownership was free and incremental for workers, not a trade for wages or other benefits. But we got plenty of things wrong. We didn't communicate well. So if I said something like, we'd hope to sell a business in 5 years, that often led to employees literally counting the days or growing suspicious if things took longer. We didn't share our financial information, so people didn't know how the business was doing. You see, ownership is about a lot more than just giving out stock. It's about trying to create a whole different type of culture, an ownership culture.
I mean, we talked about CHI, but do you have the data to know whether there will be many more CHIs, that company wasn't just a one-off?
So we've done this 50 times over 15 years, and we've done this in the United States, Western Europe, Vietnam, Japan. We've done this all over the world. Of the 50, we've exited something around 15, and they're among the best deals we've done. And we've had third parties look at the performance and have said these are outliers to the positive, like this is from a financial perspective working, and then the impact on the workers is indisputable.
I mean, I'm trying to put myself in the headspace of someone who works for a company that you've bought, and let's say I've been there a long time and I like the changes you're making. And then, you know, it turns out, okay, KKR is ready to sell and I get a big check and that's great. But then I'd be terrified. I'd be like, what happens now? This was a fun experiment. But I guess what responsibility do you feel to the long-term well-being of the people whose lives you've improved in the short term?
There's a bunch of components to that. So one is a responsibility to make sure people are prepared for a financial return like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we take a lot of care to offer financial coaching both along the way and then at the end. And then in terms of the company that may be coming in to acquire it, in our experience, it is attracting a different type of buyer.
Mm.
And even if it's a similar buyer we would have had 10 years ago, they're thinking differently. Like, oh my goodness, look at this culture that's been created. How do we retain it? How do we replicate it? You know, because it's hard to take away. So once we get this into these companies, my hope is this becomes a self-perpetuating system and it just grows, you know, exponentially over time.
What if a company had offered to buy it that didn't provide employee financial support and sharing and profits and those sorts of things? Would you have sold the company anyway?
We are fiduciaries, and most of our money is where it comes from is people's retirement funds. So we manage a lot of like teacher pension money, for example. And our obligation to them is to maximize their returns.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, that is what we have to do. Now, having said that, the types of buyers who are attracted to a business like this, they tend to be very values aligned. So I think that this is not a silver bullet. It's not like if we could just do this, the economy is going to be okay. And, you know, the social contract, which is so broken with frontline workers, is all going to be fine. But we got to start somewhere. And this is certainly, in my mind, an unequivocally positive step.
Pete, this has been such an interesting interview because you've gotten a lot of press over the last year. And frankly, the only good things people have to say about private equity these days are often related to you and this idea of bringing employee ownership into companies. And I guess I'm wondering why you decided to do this strategy through private equity. Why not use another means? Because there are other ways. There are cooperatives, there are paying people higher wages, so many other ways to make sure people feel valued at work.
Well, this is the tool that I have access to. And yeah, there's lots of different ideas out there, you know, with respect to cooperatives, and I don't mean this in any kind of a derogatory sense whatsoever. I think anything that gives workers a stake is amazing. Cooperatives have not scaled, is just the fact. The aggregate revenue of all the cooperatives, you know, adds up, in total, adds up to a, you know, one decently sized public company, one. So the opportunity with private equity is scale. KKR, if you add up the employee base for all of our companies, we employ like 800,000 people. So, you know, one public company that I worked with, not related to my KKR duties, but Harley-Davidson, I spent time with the CEO thinking through how we could implement broad-based employee ownership with their union. We ended up doing it. It took a while, and it impacted, again, not minimizing it, but impacted maybe, I think, 4,000 workers, which is great. But if we could get one additional major private equity firm to say, you know what, we're going to do this everywhere, that could be a million people.
I want to just use the last few minutes that we have together to talk about a moment on stage.
I just kept looking around at all the people around me thinking how much...
You played a video. It was a PR video about some of the employees who've received cash payouts.
This is what we did.
Every cent that we get back, we earned.
You know, employee ownership models that you've brought to them.
They deserve to be applauded because they earned it.
And you got pretty emotional up there, Pete. You teared up.
All right. Try and explain that again.
And, you know, we've just talked about strategies and capitalism and turnaround ways of getting companies off the ground, blah, blah, blah. But what you're getting out of this, other than financial gain, it feels like it's really close to your heart.
Yeah, part of the emotion for me is my dad. You know, my dad was a frontline worker, felt very mistreated. His union was constantly fighting with the company. He operated a road grader for 40-plus years in suburban Chicago and never felt listened to, never felt respected, never felt like he had any stake in the outcome. You know, he used to talk all the time about how, as an hourly employee, you have these really weird incentives where you don't want to work too hard or be too productive because your hours go down and your paycheck follows. And so my dad always dreamt of giving him and his colleagues a chance to build wealth. So, you know, part of the emotional impact for me is thinking about my dad. And, you know, a lot of times, frontline workers at companies, they have never been recognized ever in their career, like ever. Forget about getting asked for suggestions. They've never been recognized. And so they become an owner in the business and they're moved to tears just upon the grant of the stock. When it works, this is the most amazing thing that can happen inside of a business, not only for the business, but for the people, for the community. We talk so much about inclusive capitalism, it drives me crazy. And this is it. Like, you want inclusive capitalism? Well, then people need to be included in ownership. That's it.
That was Pete Stavros. He's the co-head of global private equity at KKR. He's also the founder and chairman of the nonprofit Ownership Works. You can see his full talk at TED.com. Thank you so much for listening to our show about how teams work. This episode was produced by Katie Monteleone, Matthew Cloutier, Chloe Weiner, and James Delahousie. This episode was edited by Sanaz Meshkinpour, Rachel Faulkner-White, and me. Our production staff at NPR also includes Fiona Guerin and Harsha Nahada. Irene Noguchi is our executive producer. Our audio engineers were Robert Rodriguez and Gilly Moon. Our theme music was written by Ramtin Arablouei. Our partners at TED are Chris Anderson, Roxanne Hailash, Alejandra Salazar, and Daniela Balarezzo. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and you've been listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR.